It's the Brady and the Bunch podcast, presented by 101.3 The Game.
Welcome back. It is the Brady and the Bunch podcast. Very, very excited for our next guest, a guy that you have gotten to know his name and gotten to know a little bit on the air because he's made some sporadic appearances on The Huddle, and you heard him co-host Sports Saturday a couple of weeks ago along with Aaron Wells. He's affectionately known by Arnie as Intern Nick. However, he's really part-time Nick. So we've got Nick Mumley here with us. Nick, how are you?
Good, Brady. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, I'm glad that we're going to do this because I've only been telling you for about 8 weeks that I wanted to do a podcast with you. And every time you're in here, I end up being too busy to be able to record it. So I'm glad we can get it done now. So, Nick, you got an interesting story, which is part of the reason why I wanted to have you on. You know, you're only 20 years old. You've got a bright future in this business, and you've been with us as an intern and now a part-timer for probably about a year and a half, 2 years now, and you've done a great job working your way up. But just kind of start with this. What made you want to get into media?
Well, growing up, I spent a lot of time around the radio, in a radio station environment. My biological father used to work at RSA and WWSR in St. Albans, Vermont, way before I was born. And then he came up to here to the sister station, WVMT, yeah, for a little while and helped host the morning show for a little bit there. So he was always around it, but that was a little bit before my time. And then unfortunately, he passed away when I was young. My mom remarried a broadcast engineer.
Okay.
And so he was the engineer when I was really young. He was the engineer at what was left of the St. Albans station. And then he moved over and was the engineer for a different, I think, Hall Communications.
Okay.
Here in Burlington.
The
as
rivals,
well.
We don't speak of them.
Yes. But but I spent a lot of time in those two buildings growing up as a kid. And it always just fascinated me because I feel like, you know, when you're a kid, you look at your father, and a lot of times he's a hero to you, and you kind of want to do what he does. And it always fascinated me, all the cool stuff. And I always liked listening to the radio as a kid, and I've always had a passion for sports too. And so now, you know, my goal really since I've been young is to kind of put those together and to get into sports broadcasting.
Well, you've got a lot of experience already for someone who's 20 years old. You've been with us, as I said, for a year and a half. You grew up around the business. You also host a television show on St. Albans Public Access Television, The Inside Groove, where you talk all things racing. And we've recently, you know, gotten into racing a little bit too. We had Mike Warren on from Plattsburgh Airborne Speedway a couple of weeks ago. So you've done a lot of things at a young age, and you're not going to school right now. Why not?
Well, I went to Linden State College for a year, and it was, the story starts back in high school.
Okay.
My junior, senior year. Let me
tell you a
story here. No, my junior, senior year in high school, I was kind of feeling like I didn't really have an opportunity to do anything in broadcasting with the high school classes I was given. And
okay,
most of what I did, I did on my own. I started helping out and being on the air doing talk shows at the Northwest Access TV in St. Albans when I was 15 years old. I started there, and I just did that on the side of high school and with playing sports and everything. And my hope for college was that it would be more generalized and specific to broadcasting, and most of it was. And I learned a lot my first year at Linden, and the stuff I learned there is invaluable. But I also realized that I was ending up having to go and take math and science classes and just stuff that I didn't feel was 100% necessary for me to be the best sports broadcaster I could be. And in those opportunities where, you know, I would have a chance to maybe go be on a radio show or go do play-by-play for a basketball game, I found myself being stuck with math homework, and that just didn't make sense to me. And you know, where I've grown up, we don't come from a whole lot of money, and I didn't want to run myself into into thousands of dollars of debt. So I said, I messaged you towards the end of my freshman year of college, and I said, what are the opportunities here? Is there any chance that I could come in maybe as an intern? And I came here for the summer, and I really liked it, and I made the decision that I wasn't going to go back because, quite honestly, from you teaching me just the ins and outs and the basics of the business, I learned more in the three months that I had the summer internship here than I did an entire year of college. And the only thing it cost me was a tank of gas to get to Burlington. Well, and so that made it worth it for me. And, you know, I just feel like, for me personally, college wasn't a great fit.
You know, I think college is obviously a good thing. I went to college for 4 years, and I think having a degree is certainly beneficial. I'm not going to stand up here on the soapbox and say that every single person in this business needs to have a degree, because I do feel like this is a business where just doing things is really, really good education. And, you know, I'll say the same thing. Even though I loved Oswego and I took a lot of, you know, I took journalism classes, I didn't even take broadcasting classes. My best education in this business was working at the campus television station and learning about the campus radio station, even though I didn't do a ton with it. And I found that far more valuable. I found that kind of extracurricular stuff far more valuable than some of the actual classes that I took. And you're just getting that extracurricular stuff in a different forum than I got it. I got it on campus. You got it off campus, or you're getting it off campus. So I do feel like this is a business where a college degree, look, it's beneficial for every resume, but right. I don't think it's a prerequisite to do this job well.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as long as I think the most invaluable experience in this field is to actually get in the studio and work with stuff, you know, practice editing and cutting up audio, making promos, learning how to run the board. That stuff, learning how to do that stuff here has been so beneficial for me, and it's opened up a lot of doors because now I can say, hey, I know how to do all this stuff. You know, I know how to produce and to do all the behind the scenes stuff. And when I can put that on top of being a talent on the air, then that's really big time for me.
What has surprised you? The more that you have been around us and the more you've done your show for Public Access Television, The Inside Groove, what has surprised you about this business?
Well, you guys are just normal people, I guess. when I was growing up, before 101.3 The Game, formerly 101.3 ESPN, got the ESPN license back when it was Champ 101.3, I was about 10 years old.
Okay.
And ESPN Radio was still with 1420 AM in St. Albans.
Okay.
And they put all the games on the radio. And then Champ 101.3 bought it when I was probably about 10 or 11 years old. And I remember hearing Rich Haskell and Rob Ryan come on for the very first edition of what is now The Huddle. And then Rob Ryan would also do the play-by-play for the Lake Monsters games about every night. And that's what I would listen to growing up. From when I got home from school, I would listen to that show, and then I would listen to the Lake Monsters game. And it was all on the same station that, you know, Mike and Mike was on.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, you guys just seemed like larger than life to me. And now that I've gotten into it and met all these people in the field, it's like, everybody's, you know, just a normal person.
You know, Arnie likes to ask this question of listeners who have coming and seeing the operation. So I guess I'll just ask you, is it easier or harder than you expected it to be to, you know, to plan a show, execute a show? You've done it for Sports Saturday now. You've been a part of The Huddle as a producer. Is it easier or harder than you expected?
I don't think I'd be on either side of it. I didn't really know what would go into putting together a show before I came here. That's helped me a lot with my own show. Like if I went and tried to start my own show, if I tried to start The Inside Groove before I interned here, I would have no idea what I was doing. And especially at Linden, I learned a lot at Linden in this sense as well. Just seeing all that goes on to make it possible. I guess if I had to choose one, I would say harder. But going into it, I really was clueless. I didn't have any idea what went on to, you know, put these things together. And now that I've learned it, you know, it feels kind of like second nature because I just do it so much. But I just have a lot of fun with it. But if I had to choose an answer there, I would say a little bit harder.
What's the ultimate goal for you? Because look, I'd love for you to be here forever as our part-timer. That is not reality. You have a bright career ahead of you, and you're going to go on and do great things. What's the ultimate goal?
If I had to choose one dream job, it would be being the play-by-play guy for NASCAR every Sunday and announcing the NASCAR races on TV or radio. But unfortunately, there's only about 4 jobs open for that, 2 on TV, 2 on radio. So it's, you know, that would take a lot of hard work and a lot of luck and a lot of talent that, you know, I don't know if I have. But, you know, it's that would be the ultimate goal. But really, to be honest, anything where I can make a living talking about sports would be a dream job for me.
Where did the love of racing come from? Because when we've joked, you know, plenty of times how I'm not a racing fan and I don't really get it. And I, you know, when we need to talk about it, I do my best to do my homework and try to learn about it. But look, it's stereotypical, but we associate racing with a Southern sport. But I have learned from you that there is a big racing contingent here in New England. How did you get into it?
So this goes back to when I was about, well, it was actually 2005. There's a couple of things that I distinctly remember as a 6-year-old that really that got me into NASCAR. And the first one was just flipping through channels with my parents one day, and we happened to turn to the Daytona 500. And, you know, I'm 6 years old, so I'm fascinated by, you know, any sort of vehicle, you know, tractors, trains, any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And we watched this thing. We turn on the Daytona 500 just out of pure coincidence, and there was a car that ended up flipping over and just a massive crash. Car flipped over through the infield. And I was like, wow, that's really cool.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, I thought it was.
All the destruction, guy could be injured. That's really cool.
I just thought it was really cool. And I went about half the season without watching it again. And then I had my Uncle Dave, who unfortunately just passed away this past year. He was just a huge racing fan. Big Dale Earnhardt fan, had all his memorabilia and all that throughout the house. And he was living with us at this time. And he was watching a race one day. And I got another family member of mine gave me a toy car, a number 20 car.
Okay.
And I went up to my Uncle Dave with this 20 car. And I said, hey, who drives this car, as he was watching the race? And he says, Tony Stewart. And I was like, okay, well, I'm a Tony Stewart fan now. And it just became a tradition after that. My mom, my uncle, and me would just sit and watch the race every Sunday, and they'd cheer for Dale Jr. and I'd cheer for Tony Stewart. And it just became it was just kind of a tradition. Every Sunday we would, you know, get home and watch the race and make lunch or whatever. And now, you know, I have a younger brother who's 12 years old now, and that's what we do every Sunday now too. So it's just kind of, you know, it's a fun sport because it's exciting, but it's also that family aspect. It's always brought the family together, and that's what I love so much about it as well.
You know, I asked Mike Warren, again, who's been a friend of mine for a number of years now and is the voice of Plattsburgh Airborne Speedway and also the voice of the Albany-Saratoga Raceway, and I asked him this question. I'm going to ask you, too. When you tell people you're a racing fan, okay, it's not in the mainstream, do you feel annoyed at, you know, people like me, and that you feel like you have to like beat your head against the wall of trying to get credibility for the sport? Like, no, this is a real sport. This is why you should like it. Or do you accept that we don't, you know, care about it that much? And that for you, it's a source of pride to be like, yeah, you know what? I like something different. And that's cool too.
When I see someone like you who you know, isn't a fan of racing, the first thing I want to say is come with me to a race and then we'll see how it is. Because racing is very much a sport that I think personally that you need to see live before you make an official distinction on it. Because you get to the racetrack, there's sounds, there's smells, the cars are loud. When they go by all in a big pack, you can feel them in your seat. Just, you can feel just the vibration and the pure power. And it's just a really cool experience. Really unlike any other. It's not like the mainstream, you know, going to a basketball, football, hockey game, where it's pretty much the same thing. You go down, you sit in an arena, and you watch the game in front of you. I think it's different on TV, but And I'm always welcome to, you know, tell anybody anything they might want to know about racing to see if maybe it's something that interests them. And I get it if people don't like it. But I think that to make an official decision on it, you need to go see a race first and then decide, because I think the watching a race in person is unlike any other thing in this country.
You know, I remember the first time I was in the business that I got to go and do really, really cool things. I remember getting a chance to it was UAlbany and Stony Brook in the America East Championship, and I was working there, and I remember the energy and how cool it was and how cool I felt for getting to be there. I remember the first chance that I had to go to Super Bowl Media Week, and it was Panthers Broncos in San Francisco, and I remember how I felt being there and the nerves that went with it and the excitement, and again, how cool I felt doing it. You recently had probably that experience for you where you got to go cover a race at the New Hampshire Motor Speedway, and that's something that you had worked really, really hard to get credentialed for, and you were able to do it and do a good job of it. What was that like for you when you got to step on to that arena as a media member for the first time?
It was a dream come true. It was kind of like a confirmation. This is absolutely what I want to do for my career. I wanted so bad to just follow the NASCAR series on to the next week and the next track and just do that for the entire season, because it was just so cool to be right there. And within, you know, I could reach out and touch. Obviously, you can't because you'd get in trouble. But you could just reach out and touch these cars and, you know, bumping shoulders with the drivers that you've grown up watching. You know, sitting there and seeing Jimmy Johnson right in front of me. You know, a guy that I grew up hating because he always won every race when Tony Stewart didn't. Was just wow. Like it was so cool. It was something that 6-year-old me would have passed out if I would have known that I would have gotten this opportunity in my lifetime. And it's just, it was just the coolest thing ever. It just makes me want to work that much harder to get there and to be able to do that as a job.
What surprised you about the experience?
The accessibility.
Yeah.
So basically you have your top 10 teams with all the drivers, and those guys are just completely inaccessible. Like they hide as much as they can because obviously they're the most popular guys. They're the stars of the sport. They're like completely inaccessible. But then if you go to the other half of the garage with the smaller teams, like those guys are so nice, and they're just like normal guys that are just driving on the same track as Kyle Busch and these big time race car drivers. And it was really interesting to see, you know, the difference when you go from one end of the garage to the other. But
that is not a unique experience, by the way. So when I was when you go to the Super Bowl, it's very, very similar at Super Bowl Media Night. And so you get each year, there's like 8 podiums where the most prominent players have to, you know, they have to speak to the media, and they're out there on podiums. And you usually will see, you know, if it's the Patriots, Bill Belichick will be on one, Tom Brady will be on another, James White will be on another, Sony Michel will be on another, and Julian Edelman will be on another. And then you'll get some of the top defensive players, Dante Hightower, Devin McCourty, and usually maybe one more that you weren't expecting. And then just around the rest of the arena, you'll see all the players walking around. And the players, you'll get 2 groups of people. You get the group of people that really, really are kind of unknown players, and they're soaking up the experience, and they want the attention. They're rookies. Like, they enjoy talking. There's not a lot of people around them, so you can get really good stories. And then you get the other group of people that doesn't want to talk to the media at all. So what they do is, it's really funny. So every year at Super Bowl Media Night, the players are in team-issue jumpsuits, and they have their logos on them, and they have numbers on the side, or they have numbers on the chest plate,
yeah,
and then the team logo on the side. So you know, okay, this is Patriots, and if you look at the chest, it's number 52. So what they will do if they don't want to talk to the media is they will carry a backpack, and that backpack will cover the chest plate so you can't see their number. Because it's a heavily sponsored event, they'll have like a Gatorade towel. They'll roll that towel around their neck so it drapes down over the number so you can't see it at all. They'll turn their credential inside out so that they can't get seen. So it's a very, very similar experience.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. But no, it was kind of fascinating to find out, you know, who was, you know, to watch these guys, to, you know, get up close and personal with all these guys that that I've watched, and me and my family have just kind of seen as heroes for my entire childhood life, to be up close and personal with them and to, you know, be able to talk to these guys and see which ones are actually nice people and which ones aren't so much nice people.
Now,
so.
And you've also had the opportunity since then to go to Thunder Road and cover, as a media member as opposed to just a fan, cover right. the races at Thunder Road. What was it like for you to do it on the local level after having seen it on the national level?
It really wasn't all that much different, except for that accessibility part. You know, most of the, you go to Thunder Road and just about all of those guys, they say, like, unless it's the race winner, if you say, hey, do you have time for a couple questions? They're like, what do you mean? Really? Like, they aren't expecting it at all, because, you know, these guys are just average Joes. They have a 9-to-5 job. They just race cars on Thursday night, in Barrie. And so, but other than that, it's the same process, really. It's, you know, you just walk through the garage, and it's cool because you can see them working on the cars and all this kind of behind the scenes stuff that you don't see on TV, or you don't see just sitting in the stands waiting for the cars to come out on the track. It's a cool experience. And but Thunder Road and New Hampshire, really not all that much different, except for the accessibility of the top drivers. Mm-hmm. Everybody at Thunder Road's happy to be interviewed.
Your television show on St. Albans Public Access Television is on Monday nights. Where did the idea for the show come from?
Well, so I've been doing shows there as a guest since I was about 16 years old. One of the shows that I was a guest on, just the person who hosted it just decided that he was done with it.
And it was a racing show?
No, this okay. was just a sports talk show. And so at this point, I was kind of like, we went about a month without it, and I was like, man, I'm really itching to talk some sports. So I started thinking, maybe starting my own show would be really a really cool thing, and I could use this as kind of a resume piece where I could put this in instead of a college degree. And at that point, I started getting really serious, and I was like, man, talking about racing every week, just recapping the races, would be so much fun, so cool. Because, you know, I sit down, watch them anyway, and yeah. it'd be good practice.
Yeah.
And one of my buddies, Dustin Tanner, is also a huge racing fan. And I asked him, I was like, would you maybe want to do this? And he's like, yeah, awesome. Yeah, for sure. And so we started it out last August, and we started out, we had one of my best friends from elementary school and high school, who is just a local racer, races in the lower divisions at Airborne, and he was our first guest. And from there, we've kind of grown, and we've gotten connections in NASCAR, and we've been to the racetrack. We've interviewed Steve Phelps, who's the president of NASCAR, thanks in large part to you guys here. And it's just grown from there, and it's just been a lot of fun, and it's something I look forward to every week.
Well, and the show has certainly grown. You mentioned being able to get the president of NASCAR on. That is, what was that like for you? Because I don't remember who the first, quote, big guest that I ever got was, but I remember the process and the painstaking efforts to make sure that I could get on guests on my first radio shows. And then as the name started to grow, you know, I was like, okay, like, this feels pretty cool. Like, now I'm talking to Jimmer Fredette. And then I had Marcus Stroman on of the Blue Jays at one point, and I was like, this feels awesome.
Yeah. It's really cool because, first and foremost, I'm a NASCAR fan. And to be able to sit there and watch the races on Sunday, this is like, for me, it was like being a diehard football fan and getting to ask Roger Goodell questions about what he thinks the sport's future is going to be. But this was just kind of the NASCAR version of that. And so, you know, I've obviously been watching for so long. I had so many questions that, you know, I just wanted to ask him about, you know, what he thinks the future is going to look like. Obviously, in the last 10 years, NASCAR has hit a huge decline based on what it was in the early 2000s. And Steve Phelps has kind of been brought in to fix that. And it was just really cool to be able to ask him questions about what his plans are and just kind of get a better glimpse of what his job and what his role is like as president of NASCAR, and kind of seeing things from the other side where he's in charge and he has to adhere to the angry mob of fans that's, you know, coming out and, oh, we want this, we want that, and they can never make up their minds. And Steve Phelps has to make these decisions and just kind of hope it sticks and hope the fans like it.
How do you think he's doing, by the way?
I think he's doing great. the last president of NASCAR didn't come to the track a whole lot, or the last CEO of NASCAR wasn't at the track ever, just super inaccessible. And they pulled up, NASCAR has very, very strong Southern roots. NASCAR in the mid 2000s, when they were at their peak, pulled away from those Southern roots and tried to go out to California, tried to go out to Texas, tried to go north. And for the large part, it didn't work. And now and they built a lot of tracks that are by and large the same exact track, which is different, which is unfortunate, because one of the most unique things about NASCAR is that every week you go to a different track and there's different, you know, it's like playing a different team every week in football or hockey. But Steve Phelps has kind of been brought in to clean up this mess that the last president and group that was in charge kind of made. And the fans want to have more short tracks like Bristol. Bristol is a household name among any sports fan, I feel like, as one of the biggest races of the year. They go to Bristol twice a season, and fans want more races like Bristol. So he's helping out by doing that. They want more road course racetracks where, you know, you're not just turning left. You're turning left and right. Throws a whole other challenge at all the drivers.
There are actual places in NASCAR where you do right turns?
Yeah, they do three races a year. Where you turn left and right, just like, you know, any other racing series.
Wow.
And when Steve Phelps came in, there was two tracks like that. He's brought in one more, in just the like 2 years that he's been president. So he's making changes, and Steve Phelps, like I said earlier, I'm a racing fan first and foremost. Steve Phelps is the same way. And that was the coolest thing that I heard, that he told me in the interview I did with him, was that, you know, he grew up going to the local short tracks here in Vermont as well.
Catamount Motor Speed or Catamount Speedway?
Catamount Stadium, the former track in Milton. And, you know, he's a racing fan first and foremost, too. And I think that's what NASCAR needs, was a race fan, to be run by a race fan, not a businessman.
You know, you're a local sports fan, too, and you've mentioned a lot to me privately about a lot of the memories you've had going to UVM games. So how deep is your UVM fandom, and what memories do you have going to Catamount games?
Oh, I love UVM sports. It's always kind of been, they're the big ticket here in Vermont. We're not a big sports state, and UVM, for when I was growing up, the hockey team to be really, really good. And now the basketball team is really, really good, and getting noticed at a national stage is something that doesn't happen very much for Vermont. And that's a really cool feeling to be able to see that, and to be able to go to those games, you know, all the time has just been a staple of my childhood as well. So big UVM fan.
You know, and you got a chance to work on some UVM games last year for us. And for not to get too technical, but basically the most, I don't want to say the lowest on the totem pole, but I guess the most entry-level job you can have in sports radio is being what we call a board op. And that means that you are the guy who is here while the game is going on, pushing all the buttons, engineering it, making sure that it stays on the air, making sure it gets out to your radios. And that's how most people who get into this business start. That's how, you know, some of the first things that I did was having to run a board. Nick, you were doing that too for us last year, doing some stuff for UVM women's basketball over on WVMT. And it was kind of a coming full circle moment for you, because you mentioned earlier in the interview that your biological dad worked at WVMT. So, well, even though you were doing a job that I understand is not the most fun job in the world, I understand that giving up your nights and weekends to go and press buttons for any sporting event is not the most fun job you can have. What was it like for you to be in the same studio at WVMT where your dad had been?
Yeah, it was in there about every Wednesday night for women's basketball, every Friday and Saturday night for
men's hockey
yeah, as well. And that was not only cool because, especially the men's hockey part, because growing up, I watched all the men's hockey broadcasts on the website and listened to them on WVMT. As a kid, I mean, that's how I spent my Friday and Saturday nights as a kid.
And that's how you're spending them as an adult.
And now I'm, you know, getting to be a part of that broadcast, even in just a minuscule way, it was really cool for me. And that was cool. But the coolest part, like you said, being in the same studio that my dad worked before I was born, was just awesome. And I actually have a bunch of pictures of my dad and Ernie Farrar in that studio, just, you know, doing their show and messing around with each other. back in the 80s and early 90s. And that's and to be able to see those pictures and then go and actually work in that studio was so cool. It was just really special for me, for sure.
One of the things that I am most proud of you of, and one of the things that I think you've done best in your time since you've been here, was that you had a chance to go for us to Hartford and cover UVM men's basketball in the NCAA tournament against Florida State. Man, I thought you just did an awesome job running our social media, and you did the same thing at the America East tournament too. So you got to kind of follow the Catamounts all the way through their postseason journey. What was that like for you?
That was just as cool. That's the coolest thing I've ever done, second to New Hampshire. That was so cool because, you know, like I said, growing up a UVM fan, listen to the Catamount broadcasts every time they played, and then being able to go to the tournament where they play big and March Madness. I mean, it's just such
a
spectacle.
What was that like for you?
It's such a spectacle. Everybody's there. Everybody has their eyes on it. You know, all my friends and family are sitting there watching it on TV, and I'm there sitting on press row, like right next to the right court side. And
yeah,
it was just it was such a cool experience, and something that I'll never forget. And it was just really, really cool. There's no other words to describe it. It's just the coolest thing ever.
Well, hopefully we're doing it again this March, because that would
definitely mean
that the Catamounts are playing really, really well again, and we certainly expect them to do that. Nick Mumley, no longer intern Nick. One day I'll get Arnie to stop calling you that. He is part-time Nick, and he's crushing it in everything that he does. And Nick, I'll just say this to you, whether you're in Vermont for the rest of your career or whether you eventually leave, you are on to great things, and you are definitely a name that people should know. And you know, years from now, when we're interviewing Vermonters again who have gone on to do big things, you will be one of them, I'm sure. So
I really hope so.
So, Nick Mumley, we appreciate it, man, and keep crushing it for us. And we look forward to seeing you on the Inside Groove on Cable Access up in St. Albans.
Awesome, Brady. Thanks for having me on.